They find the money all of a sudden. And they can't figure out how come, you know, they have money right in their bags and everything else when they know that they paid for the grain. So it's written by Yetze Libom that their heart stopped literally. And they were all greatly disturbed, greatly frightened, and they said to each other, saying, what is this that God has done unto us? So in other words, what is this child saying to Rabbi Yochanan? He says the Torah already had it mentioned. Because look at these brothers of Joseph. They knew that they had done wrong, right? In that they had betrayed their brother, yet who did they blame for this? Mazoi Soso the Kim Lado. What is this that God has done to us? In other words, Rabbeinu Shalom, he's the one who's responsible for us. I've had kids, you know, who said, you know, the devil made me do it. But as we can see, these brothers of Joseph, they were complaining, you know, hey, the Rabbeinu Shalom. I once heard a very good taich. This was called the name of the Rav, Rabbi Levin, who used to be Rav in Minneapolis. It's written in the Gillis Wiss over there that Naomi and Ruth, they go back to Bethlehem, remember, right? And Naomi, everybody is shocked to see how terrible Naomi looks right now. You know, they say, Hazos Nobi, right? Is this Nomi? They can't imagine that, you know, she looks as terrible as she does, you know, after her widowhood and everything else, you know, everything. So what does Nomi say to them? She gives a complaint. She says, Ani Meleyo Yotzosi. When I went out, in other words, when I left Beit Lechem, so at that particular time, I was full in the sense of, you know, I had my husband, I had my children, I had wealth and everything else. But then what does she say? Berekon Heshivani Hashem. The Rabbeinu Shalelem has brought me back empty-handed. Mm-hmm. In other words, when she was prosperous, it's Ani Malaya Yotzasi, right? But now that she is suffering, you know, from poverty, she's lost all her possessions. She lost her husband, she lost her children, right? Then it's Reikon Heshivani Hashem. She's blaming the individual.
I suppose it's natural because all things come from the
right. So, but anyway, to continue with the story, Dalene, Rabbi Yochanan raised his eyes, the Chozobe, and he looked at him. Now, how did he look at him? He looked at him probably with astonishment, maybe admiration. But Asyo Ime, his mother, then came. That is, you know, this child's mother came. Afikte, and she slept him out from Rabbi Yochanan's presence. Omrole, and she said unto him, Ta, becoming of the other loch, kidavid labuch. Come before he does unto you just as he did to your father. In other words, you know, the fact that he caused the early demise of Reish Lakish, his child's father, so she doesn't want, you know, Rabbi Yochanan to give an idara, so to speak, you know, to the child that he too would die a premature death. So Omar Rabbi Yochanan, now there's another statement that is attributed to Rabbi Yochanan. It says, Motor Bishvil Yochid Parnosa Bishvil Rabin, which means rain can come because of the merit of an individual or because of the prayer of an individual, and Parnosa will come because of the needs of the many, the multitude. Motor Bishvil Yochid Yisiv, how do we know this? That rain, for example, comes because even of one individual, because it's written Yiftach Ad Hashem Lechor Esot Tzavar HaTov. The Rabbeinu Shalom will open up his storehouse, his treasure house, unto you in order to give rain to your land. Now, of course, you know that what is the ending Chor in Hebrew?
World.
No, it isn't. contrary, it's singular.
L'cho
is singular. L'cho ending is singular. In other words, to you. Even for you, if you pray unto the Rabbeinu Shalom, then God will open up his storehouse and give rain, right? Parnosa b'shvil rabin, but how do we know that parnosa is given for the sake of many, not for the sake of one individual? Yichsiv, as it's written, Hineni mamtir lochem lechem. Behold, I will cause rain to, I will cause bread to rain down upon you. This, of course, in reference to the man, to the manna, right? And of course, lochem is plural. So because of the needs of the community of Israel, you know, the Adas Yisrael, this is the reason why the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to bring lechem, is going to bring down food for them, bread literally, but it means food in general, and this is equated with panosa. Panosa means that you have food to eat, okay? Meisvei. So now they ask a kasha about this, Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda, Omer, Rabbi Yosef Bar Yehuda says, Shloisha panosim doivim omdu liYisrael. He says that the people of Israel had three good parnosim. Now, of course, we have to understand the word parnos. When we use the word parnos today, parnos means like official, a shul. They used to call the shul officials, they called them parnos. Right, the parnasei ha'ir, parnasei, something else.
That's Farsi, isn't it? Is it a borrowed word?
No, it's not. It's a good Talmudic word. Okay. So, but what is the root of the word parnos? The answer is the parnes. In other words, they provide. Okay? So in other words, the people of Israel had three good individuals who provided for them. And who were these three good individuals? Elohim, they were Moshe, the Aaron, or Miriam. Okay. The Gimel Matonis Toives Nitnu Al Yodom, and there were three great gifts that were given through them. The Elohim, and what are they? The air, this is the well, the onon, and the cloud, umon, and the manna. The air, the well, of course, this was the well which provided, there was a well which followed the people of Israel as a nest, right, in the wilderness, so that they had water to drink. Now, in whose merit was this? It was Bishus Miriam. It was because of the merit of Miriam. Amud Anon, the pillar of cloud which stood over the Ohel Moed and which led the people of Israel, you know, when they had to go forward and so on, right? So it's Bishus Aaron. This was in the merit of Aaron. Man, the manna, this was Bishus Moshe. Mesa Miriam. Now, when Miriam died, Nistalek Haber, then the well disappeared. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vatomos Shom Miriam, right, that Miriam died over there. Uchsiv Basrei, and then right after that, we find it's written, Veloha Yomayim Lo'eda, that there was no water for the congregation. So from this, we see that why was there no water for the congregation? Because the well had disappeared with the death of Miriam. And then it says, V'chazwa b'schush lehem. And but it returned because of the merit of the two, and actually which two? It means Moshe and Aaron. Because of their merit, so the well once more returned to the people of Israel. Meis Aaron, then when Aaron died, Nistalku Anonei HaKovei, right, then the clouds of glory literally they went up, in other words, they disappeared. Right. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, by Yishma Haknani Melech Arad, the Canaanite who was the king of Arad heard, and the Gemara asked, Mashmu Shoma, what did he hear? Of course, the, you know, actually there it says, Kibo Yisrael Derecha Asorim, I mean, that the people of Israel, we heard, you know, that the people of Israel were coming in a certain area over there, you know, and then getting close to this land, okay? But when you make a drasha, make a drasha. What did he hear? So he heard what? Shema Shema Aaron. He heard that Aaron had died. The Nistalku Anone Kavod. and the clouds of glory had disappeared. V'chesavur, and therefore he was of the opinion, well, if the clouds of glory, which represented, of course, the protection that the Rebbeinu Shalom was giving to the people of Israel, right? I mean, what do we say? Why do we build a sukkah? One of the opinions given in Gemara and Sukkah is the fact that they represent the what? The Anon Yaakovit, right? God's divine protection over us. Okay? So when they heard that the Anon Yaakovit, that is when the king of Arad, the Canaanite king of Arad heard, you know, that the clouds of glory had disappeared, so he was of the opinion Nitan lo reshus lilochem Israel, that now he could fight against Israel. And this explains then what does the pasuk say when it says "Vayiru kol ho'edo ki gavaron." Literally means in the pshat is that the entire congregation saw that Aaron had died. If you remember, Aaron failed to come down from the mountain where he had gone up with Moses. So you know, the fact that he didn't come down, and they saw, of course, that Moses had put on the garments of priesthood on Eleazar, the son of Aaron, so they realized, you know, that the father, that Aaron was now gone, right? So that's the pshat. But how did they take a drash? The drash would be like, for example, Vayeroo kol ha'edo, all the congregation now became visible to the enemy, because until now the cloud had protected them from them. And why did this happen? Ki govaro, because Aaron had died. Okay? Omar Rabbi Abohu, Rabbi Abohu said, Al Tikre, this is Vayiro, Elo Vayero, as I explained it already to you. Okay? Kididorish Reish Lakish, even as Reish Lakish had, taught, the Omar Reish Lakish, Ki, says the word Ki, Mishamesh Be'arba Lashonis. The word key in the Torah can have four different interpretations, four different meanings. E, sometimes it means if. Dilmor, sometimes it means maybe or perhaps. Elo, sometimes it means but. And sometimes it means the ha, which means because of this. Because. So, at any rate, in this particular case, right, if we say Ki Gavah Aaron, you know, that they saw, don't translate it that they saw that Aaron had died, but they saw
because,
or they became revealed because Aaron had died. Okay, this is the idea. Alright, now again Chozru Shneihem, nevertheless both the cloud and the Be'er came back. Why? Bizchus Moshe, because of the merit of Moshe. Meis Moshe, but when Moshe died, then this Talku Kulam, then all of these things, the Mon, the Anone Akobod,
and everything disappeared.
And the right, and then all this disappeared. Right. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Va'achechid Eshleshes Aroyim B'Yerachechad, I destroyed the three shepherds in one month. V'chi B'Yerachechad Meisu. Now we ask a logical question. How can we say that Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam all died within one month? Although Miriam Mesa ben Nisan, Miriam died in Nisan, the Aaron the Av, Aaron died in Av, and Moshe Ba'ador, Moses died in Ador. So how can we say it? Elo Melame, but it teaches us rather Shen is Batmu Gimel Maton is Toivez, Shen is Tumal Yodon, that these three gifts that were given by the Rebbeinu Shalom through their merit, right, that they came to naught for this Talku Kulam B'Yerachachod, and they all disappeared within one month. In other words, with Moshe Rabbeinu's death, then all three of them, the Mon stopped, right, and there was
cloud.
No more clouds and no more the air. So at any rate, getting back, so he says Ashkechon Almo. So we see, he says, from this story, you know, about the Shlosha Parnasim Tovim, that Parnasa Bishvil Yachid. It is possible to have Parnasa for the sake of one individual. In other words, for the sake of one Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says, oh, hold it, he says. Shani Moshe, he says, Moshe is different. Why? Kevan de la Rabim Huboy, since he prayed on behalf of the entire congregation, so Karabim Domi, therefore he is equated as if he were the entire congregation. So you cannot draw an inference of that, that only one person can bring Parnassa, that you need a Rabim, you need, you know, more than one person. Okay? Rav Huna bar Manoach, Rav Shmuel bar Ili, Rav Chia mevastenaya, Avi Shechichi kameda Rava. All these great teachers, they would come quite often, you know, to Rava. They would be found there. Kinoch nafshe de Rava. Then, when Rava died, also the come to Rav Papa. So they came to Rav Papa. Kol emas the Hava. As long as he was alive, Omaluhu Shemata Elohav Mistaber Luhu. So, as long as Rav Papa was alive, so whenever he would give a teaching, and they didn't approve of what the teaching was, in other words, they didn't like it. So, Havam Ramzia Adode. So, what did they do? So they would wink to each other, or they'd make faces and so on and so forth, in order to indicate their disapproval, right, of what the Rav Papa was saying. So Cholash Date. So as a result, Rav Papa felt very bad about this. Akruye Bechalme, and in his dream, he heard someone quoting a pasuk to him. What was the pasuk? That I destroyed the three shepherds. So the mochar, so the following day, he havim mipatre mine, as they were taking leave from him. So omaluhu, he said to them, lizlu rabbonim bishlom. May you go in peace. Well, first of all, if you'll take a look on the margin on the left over there, he says the girsa, he says, should be lishlomo. He says vayim brachos samach dalet. This is what we had right near the end of brachos, that it makes a difference as to how you say goodbye to somebody. Right, al mekomo yavo b'shalom. Right, in the case of Yisrael, so that means, you know, all these people, you know, should live in peace. So Bishalom then is the right thing to say, because so that therefore, whereas in the case of David, we learned when he said, you know, Avshalom, you know, he says Lishalom, right, go to peace. So what happened? Avshalom, we learned, you know, he died. Yeah. Remember that horrible death subsequently. So this is the reason why the marginal note over there says that it should be Lishalom. But at any rate, getting back to our story over here, on the basis of the dream that he had, where he heard this pasuk in it, and the idea is that these people who are causing him, as Rashi explains, these people who are causing him shame, you know, that they're acting disgracefully towards him, are going to be destroyed. So this is the reason why he said unto them, go in peace, as an indication to them that the Rabbeinu Shalom would punish them for their lack of disrespect. Well, I think we'll stop at this particular point. I'm running a little on the horse side right now, and it's Veldspeth. I want you to get home before the stove falls too hard.
It's rain now.
Okay, I hope it doesn't freeze. That's the one thing that bothers me.
No,
it
won't freeze. On Ahmed Bey's.
Yeah, we're on Daf Tes, Summit Base, top of the page, right.
We are ready.
All right, we are now on Daf Tes, Summit Base, the third line. Beginning with Rav Shimi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is sort of a follow-up to the last story that we did the last time, where we found that in the case of Rav Papa, if you'll take a look at the bottom of the following of the previous page, so it's written, you know, that there were certain Talmidim who happened to be students of Rabbi Chiya, And Rav Chiya passed away, so they came and they became students of Rava. And then every time that they didn't like one of Rava's opinions, they were students of Rava. And after Rava died, so they came to Rav Papa. And they didn't like Rav Papa's explanations of Torah, so they made all kinds of grimaces and faces at each other.
Signal.
Right. And so therefore we saw that, he didn't like it. He became ill as a result of this. And he had a dream, and the dream, he saw a posuk, and the posuk said that I will destroy the three shepherds at one time. So, it's a reference then to these people. So at least he felt it was a reference to them. So the following day, when they came, so he said, go in peace, but using the expression, which is Lizl Rabbanan Bishlam or Bishalom, as we learned in the Gemara and Brachas, that this is said, when you're taking farewell of the dead. So this was to encourage them to change their mind and mend their ways and stop making faces whenever he taught Torah. Okay.
Or else leave the class.
Right. So they don't have to tell you there are people who are very, very sensitive about these things. No, we can understand. But sometimes their sensitivity is in the wrong direction. I've had occasion to experience. I mean, that people become sensitive when they're mistaken, if they are corrected. So they don't want to be told that they were wrong. So that's already a different problem. I mean, the person has to be able to admit, that he's wrong, he's made a mistake, whatever it may be. Okay. Just a side thing. All right. So now here's a story about Rav Shimi Barashi. Ava Shachiach Kami Rav Papa. So he happened to be also a student of Rav Papa, and he would meet him, he would very often be there. So Hava Machale Tula, and what did he do? He asked him all kinds of kashas again, 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 again. In other words, he kept on bugging Rav Papa. So Yom Achad, so one day, Chazei D'Nofal Apei, he noticed that the Rav Papa literally had fallen upon his face. Well, this is really a reference to what we call saying tachta. Because, when we put our hand like this, for example, to saying tachta, this is really like a reminder of the days when people actually would prostrate themselves after the Shemoneh Esrei and recite tachta. So therefore it was called nefilas apayim, which means literally falling on the face. And, it was a time when people would engage in private prayer. After all, we know at the conclusion of the Shemoneh Esrei, we saw that when the formal brachas are over, so then we had in the Gemara and brachas a series of private tefillos that people would say, and some of them, like the kind of Solashim Meirah, became actually part of the Shemoneh Esrei. But still, it's really more like a private prayer added to it. So people would make their own prayers, and, the Tachbin, of course, always followed upon it, as we do to this very day. So he saw that, Rav Papa had fallen on his face, in other words, was there in the position of saying his private prayers. And what happened? So Shamei, he heard him, the Amar Rachmanu Litzlan, and he said, "Oh, may the Rabbeinu Shalev, Rachmanu, the all-merciful one, Litzlan, may he save us, the Kisufa de Shimi. May he save us from the shame that Shimi is causing me." In other words, Shimi, is bugging me, and please God, free me from the shame that, or the embarrassment that I have because of Shimi. So at that particular point, when he overheard Rav Papa saying this, so he took upon himself to be silent, the civil actually, and he never again asked him all these questions. All right. Okay. Now, this is sort of like an aside that came in over here, but the last Indian that we had prior to this was about the fact that does rain come because of the Tfilas HaRabim, in other words, because of you know, the congregation praying, or is it possible even that the prayer of a single individual can cause the Rabbeinu Shel Olam to bring rain? You know, when they brought in Eliyahu or Moshe Rabbeinu and so on, I mean, these are great figures, but the question is whether people who are not of the caliber of Eliyahu or the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu, can their prayers also be answered to have rain come just for the sake of one individual? Okay? So this goes back to that Indian over there. And he says, V'yapte Shlokish Sovar, which Shlokish too is of the opinion that Motu Bishvilyoch, that rain can come because of the prayers of a single individual, because of the merit of one individual. The Omer Reish Lakish, and as Reish Lakish said, Menayim the Motto of Yishul Yochid, how do we know that rain can come because of an individual? So Dixiv, the Pasuk says, Shalun Le'Hashem Motor, the Yes Malkosh, beg of God rain at the time of the latter rain. Hashem Oseh Chazizim, God makes Chazizim. And now the pasuk over there, Chazizim, really means lightnings. God, who is the maker of lightnings, not only does he make lightnings, but also Umetar Geshem Yitain Lahem Leish Esabasodet. Okay, and Metar Geshem, I mean, we use the words like Moto and Geshem synonymously. You know, after all, what do we say? We say Talamoto, right? I mean, that's what we say. Or we say Mashvarach Meir Hageshem. So that to us, the words are synonymous. But here in the Pasuk, the Matar Geshem is really like a shower of rain. This is the way the English translation of the Pasuk works. Okay? So, God who makes then the Chazizim, or the lightning, right? Or Matar Geshem, and also a shower of rain, Yitain Lahem, he will give unto them, okay? Le'ish Esav Vasodeh, to each man grass in the field. All right. Now, first of all, if you notice, there is like a little bit of a contradiction. What is the contradiction? And this is what the Gemara is going to bring up. The contradiction is that Yitain Lohem, he gives unto them, and Lohem, as we know, is plural, right? To them. And then it says, Le'ish, to each and every one. To even an individual, this is how Lakish interprets it, right? He will give, you know, a field of grass. So now they ask the following questions, okay? First of all, they ask, Yochel Lachol Talmud, Yochel Lachol, is the meaning that the praying will only come because of the merits of everyone? In other words, you need your rabbim in order to do it? Or, maybe it means, as Rashi understands it, let's take a look at the Rashi on line 3 over there. It says, Yochel Hakol, you see, third line. He says, Klomer. In other words, Yochel, is it possible that Ein Nosein Motor, God will not give rain, Ela and Kein Hakol Trichem Lo, unless everyone needs it? That's the only time that will give rain. So, Talmud Lomar, this is why the Pasuk says, Le'ish, for each person. The Tanya, and another thing we learn, E Le'ish, if it is for an individual, Yochel Lekol Sadaisa, is it meaning then that that individual requires rain for all his fields? That's when the rain falls. So, Talmud Lomar, then the Pasuk says the word Sodet, which means a field, right? So in other words, even if only one field needs it, then in the merit of this individual, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will bring rain. Now they ask the next question. Isodev, if we say that it's an individual field, Yochol L'chol HaSedev, then we mean that the entire field needs it. So he says, Talmud Lema, for this, the reason, this is the reason why the Pasuk says, Eser, grass. In other words, where there is grass planted, in other words, where there's vegetation that requires the rain, it will rain over there. But where, you know, the vegetation is such that it doesn't require the same amount of rain, then it won't rain. So each word, as we see over here, is interpreted individually. Kihodara Daniel bar Katina, even as in the case of Rav Daniel, the son of Katina, Havalei Hayigin. So he had a certain gina, gina as they got. Alright? Kol Yoima Hava Azil Visayama. So every day he would go and he'd take a look in his garden. You know, like we do when it's time for the tomatoes to grow. And
only if you plant them.
Right. How our flowers are doing and so on. So he would go into the gida, he'd go into the garden every day, take a look around. And Omar, and he would say, Ha Mishra Bayamaya, this bed requires water. The Ha Mishra Bayamaya, and this bed does not require water. The Osa Mitra and rain came, they call Mashke. And it, you know, the moisten, you know, the wet the ground. So called Hecha Dibiboyle, Maya, wherever, you know, it needed water, that's where the rain came. But otherwise, if it was a portion of the field where he said, this bed doesn't need any didn't watering come. Right now, so it didn't rain over there. So we see that all this. I just want to call your attention again to the Yochol and Talmud Lomar. The reason why this occupies a place in the Haggadah Shel Pesach that we're going to say. You know, right after we quote that Mishnah from Brochus about Rabbi Elozar ben Azariah, you know, he says, I'm like a 70-year-old man. And I was never able to convince my colleagues, you know, that we should recite Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos, that we should recite, you know, the story of the Exodus at night. Meaning, as I had interpreted when we had that, either meaning that whether the third paragraph of the Shema Yisrael is obligatory at night, because as we learned, you know, this depends on tzitzis, and tzitzis are not one at night.
Right.
Or maybe it means that, you know, that we shouldn't say, you know, let's say Emes Ve'emunah. Although, of course, they paskin afterwards, you know, that we do. But it was a question. But finally, Ben Zomer came with a raya from the Torah in order to show that this is so. That's written in the Mount Tiskas Yom Tseisko Kol Yimei Chayecha. Why does it say Kol Yimei Chayecha, right? So he says, right, it's not only the days, but also the nights. And the last interpretation is that not only Mo'ilam Hazeh, you know, but also in Yimei Mashiach, we still want to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's an event that we'll never forget about, right? All right. So, right after that, we have a quotation which says, Yochol Meirosh Chodesh, right? So what does it mean, Yochol Meirosh Chodesh? It means, maybe we should recite the Haggadah, beginning with Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? So Talmud Lomar, this is why the Torah teaches us, by Yom Ha'u, on that day. So then they ask the next question, he by Yom Ahu, if the Pasuk says by Yom Ahu, then Yochol Meirosh Chodesh, then in that case we should begin reciting the Haggadah while it is still daylight on the 14th of Nisan, right? So Talmud Lomar, Bavur Zeh. That's the reason why the Pasuk says that it is for this. You know, the Pasuk says, right, that you are to tell your child that they saying it is because of this that God took me out from the land of Egypt. So Bavur Zeh Lo Amarti, it says this does not apply. In other words, when the obligation that we should have matzah and morah are there on the table, that is the time to begin telling the story also of the Haggadah, telling the story about Egypt and so on. So we can understand then that whenever it says Yochol, Yochol means then, is there a possibility that we should do this and this, right? So Talmud Lomar, then we quote the Pasuk in order to say, no, that's not what it is, but it is as follows. But as we can see, you could have one Yochol, you could have a second Yochol, you could have a third Yochol, as we had over here, that, you know, Yochol, yeah. Okay, everybody needs it? No, it could be for one person, ish, right? Should it be, for example, you know, the Sodeh, right? So does it mean that the entire field needs it? So we would be restricted, right? And so we see that this is what that particular terminology in the Talmud is used for. Yeah. All right, let me get weiter. Now, we had the expression chazizim. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's a very fine word, but the question is, what does chazizim mean? I translated chazizim as how? As lightning, right. But as we'll see, there are others who interpret it differently. Say, my Hashem oisach chazizim, what is the meaning of that part of the pasuk where it says that God makes chazizim? So, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Bereb Chanino teaches that Melamed teaches she called tzaddik v'tzaddik HaKadosh Baruch Hu oselo chazizim v'nei atzmo, that for each and every tzaddik the Rebbeinu Shel Olam makes him like a lightning by himself. The idea being over here, of course, that you know, the brilliance of each and every one of every student who studies Torah is like a chaziz, that the Torah of God makes each and every person who learns it like a flash of light. Okay? Brilliant. So you're all brilliant.
They say, what is the meaning of Hashem? Will form clouds. They talk about clouds. They don't mention
so far, as I'm telling you. Chazizim, okay, we translated it, first of all, the way it is translated, you know, in the Bible translations, okay? Mm-hmm. Where chaziz seems to imply light. Okay. Now, my chazizim, the same question again is asked. What is the meaning of chazizim? Mm-hmm. So he wants to have a definition. What does chazizim mean? As we'll see, I'm a Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, it's porchos. Chazizim, he says, equals porchos. Porchos we had, that means that it's like hovering in the air, floating in the air. Of course, you know the word perach, you know, a flower and so on. Yeah, but we have also in the Gemara the verb poreach. Porchos means that it's like floating in the air. Yeah, all right. In other words, what he's referring to over here, a cloud. But so far what he's done is to say chazizim equals porchos. Okay? Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said that simon lemotor porchos, that a sign that rain is coming are porchos. Okay? If you see porchos, you know that it's going to rain. So again they ask the same question. All right, we said what are chazizim? We said equals porchos. Equals porchos. All right? So now he says, my porchos. So what are porchos? Obviously, he didn't understand. He didn't understand. Chazizim equals porchos. All right, good. So what's porchos? It reminds me of that the old Bill Cosby classic about Noah. I never heard about, you know, Noah is told, you know, that he should make cubits. Okay, I said, well, what are cubits?
make what?
What are cubits? He should make an ark for the elves.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So what are cubits? Yeah, what are cubits?
He asked God what cubits.
Right, right. Yeah.
Tell me you make it this long.
Of course, to this day, we're not exactly sure how long a cubit is, you know. We usually say that it's the equivalent of, a foot and a half, 18 inches. But there are those who say, no, it's actually, each cubit is 2 feet. So naturally, it's going to, you know, the longer the dimension, the greater the disparity between it. Of course, if it's 18 inches, it's one thing, but if it's 24 inches, then it's already, you know, much more. Multiply it by 100 and you can see the difference.
Check it out when we find the yard.
Yeah, right, okay.
Right, cubit was used in this amma,
right, exactly, right. That's an amma, yeah. Exactly, the word amma in Hebrew is translated. Others say, you see, that the word amma is supposed to represent the distance between, let's say, the wrist and the elbow. This is the amma, okay?
Now, what happens if you decide that the Yama is not just between this and this? And again, of course, it's going to vary in different people. But let's say it also includes up to the fingers, up to the fingertip. So obviously, it makes it that much longer. So that's why you have, you know, a difference of opinion exactly as to how long enough it is.
Okay. So anyway, all right. So now the question is, okay, good. We said parchos, right? We said chazizim or parchos, all right. So now he wants to know my parchos. So what are parchos? So I'm a rapapa. The rapapa gives an explanation. You know what parchos are? He says it's iva kalisho tute iva semichta. It means iva is like, you know, off. Or there, I mean, the cloud, okay? A cloud, which is kalisha, kalisha means like it's thin, you know, not a thin cloud, okay? To say, underneath, ivos mirta, underneath a heavy cloud, literally a thick cloud, okay? So in other words, if you see heavy clouds and then you see, you know, lighter clouds underneath, so this indicates that rain will eventually fall.
That's parchos.
So that's parchos. So that's the reason why maybe he translated the word chazizim as clouds. But he was really jumping the gun when he did that. Okay? Yeah.
It's supposed to be a light cloud and underneath a heavy cloud?
Right. I mean, you can have heavy clouds up above and then you see some light clouds underneath.
Oh, the other way around.
And that indicates, you know, that the heavy cloud is going to get heavier and heavier and the rain will come. This is what he says, okay? Omer Rav Yehuda said, it's Nehila, he says, Mikame Mitra, Osa Mitra. Osa Mitra, Osa Mitra. He says, if you see Nehila, now Nehila is usually translated as a mist, this particular case, okay? So if you see a mist before it rains, then it means osa mitra, then it means that rain will come. But if it's bosa mitra, but if you see, you know, like a light mist after the rain has fallen, then it means posik mitra, that the rain is going to stop. Mikami mitra, osa mitra. So before, it means that rain is coming. To Simon Eich, did I skip a line or not?
No.
Because sometimes, I mean, I don't have that much good light over there. To Simon Eich, he says, and your simon is Mahulta. So the question is, so what's Mahulta? Yeah, it's a good question. So Mahulta, so he says, you have to compare it to a sieve. What about with a sieve? So, as Rashi explains, it's about the middle of the page over there. It says, when you put flour through a sieve, first comes out the very fine flour, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lifsof, and finally comes out tsumen gasim, you know, the very thick bran comes out. So, the same thing. In other words, if you see a light cloud first, there's a light mist, you know, the nehila, as we said, you see that first, so it means that, you know, it's going to be followed by what? Going to be followed
by
a heavy rain, just as in the case of the sieve. So yeah, all right. Let me reread it again. All right, yes, Nehila of the coming mitra, osa mitra, osa mitra, so osa mitra. All right, then mikame mitra, osa mitra. So the fact that if it occurs before rain, so it means that rain is going to come. So simone beilta. This you can learn from the example of the sieve. Now,
the Bosor Mitra Posik Mitra. How do we know that if the rain, that is, if this light mist comes after a rainfall, a heavy rain, that means then that the rain is going to stop? So he says, Simonik, your simon for this, in other words, what you can compare it to, he says, Charya de Ize. It means the when the goats have to do
dung,
exactly. In other words, when they have to go make, okay? So first they make heavy and then they make light. So likewise, in other words, if you have the light this after the heavy rain, so that means that it's gonna stop soon, okay? They're down to earth.
Very observant.
Yeah, they were very observant of nature. I mean, first of all, they're telling you, look, in the sky, you can tell, you know, whether it's going to rain, it's not going to rain, right? And when is the rain starting, when is the rain stopping, and so on.
Meteorologists.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, maybe they were just farmers.
A lot of them were farmers, and of course they learned from experience, there's no question about it. Absolutely. At least we don't know too much about that part of it. But obviously people suffered also from this. I mean, after all, the idea of Yesurim, you know, that people suffer all kinds of pains and illnesses and so on. And we learned in Brachas, you know, how do you account for it, you know? That even the righteous people suffer, you see. You know, Melech, the Rishoyim had it, you know, only the Rishoyim, right, that's make it very simple. But why do righteous people suffer? So you know, we had to have an explanation for that too. But God was helping them get over their punishment in this world so that, you know, they'd be able to enjoy the world to come. But I guess it also, you know, not everybody can stand up, you know, to, you know, terrible suffering with the same calm philosophy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever come back. You have to believe.
Yeah.
No,
what he means is that since none of us have come back from the world to come yet, so you know, we have to take it as a matter of faith. Yeah.
That
Yesurim in this world are preparing you for the world to come when you'll have, you know, paradise. Ula ikla lebodo. Ula happened to come down to Babylonia. Chaza parchos, and he saw parchos. In other words, these clouds. All right. So amalahu. So he said to the people over there, Panu Mane, he says, hey, clear away all the things that you have out there in the field, the Hashto Osamitre, because right now it's going to start to rain. Lesov, finally, Loyosamitre, the rain didn't fall, even though he predicted that it was going to fall, because he saw the Parakos, he was convinced that it was going to rain. So it didn't rain. So Omar, so he said, says not only are the people in Babel a bunch of liars, but also even their rain is a liar.
He's really angry.
He doesn't have a bad day.
Bad hair day.
Ula. Right. There's another story about Ula now, okay? Ula ikla le Babel. Again, he happened to come to Babylonia, and the Chazon, he saw Boleit Sana de Tamrei Bezuzah. He saw that in the marketplace, a bushel answer is because Babel actually had all kinds of provinces. You know, it was really, at this time it was part of the Persian Empire, so there are all kinds of provinces, and maybe he came from a different province, and he came into the province of Babylon.
Was it part of the 127 provinces of Persia?
Well, certainly some of the provinces still remained in Persia. They lost Ethiopia eventually and some other places, but they still owned a great deal of land. No question about it. You had, Persia, you had Babel, you had Elam. These were all parts of it, and then of course it extended into Asia Minor and things like that. So yeah. So this is why I think it says, you know, that he came to Babel, even though we always associate him as being, you know, one of the great authorities in the Talmud Babel, you know. So he came and he takes a look. Maybe over here it means like the city of Babel that he came to. Possibly. Doesn't say so, but maybe that's
like
the explanation.
Like Baghdad? Or?
Yeah, well, city of Babylon, I guess, was maybe in his day. So, well, maybe it was, you know, later Baghdad maybe came into being as a result of that. Yeah. All right, at any rate, he saw that in the marketplace they were selling a whole bushel of dates for a zuz.
Mm-hmm.
So Omar, so he said, Mole tzanu de dusha bezuzo v'ablayla yaskib araysa, which means, take a look, he says, you can buy a whole bushel full of honey. And notice, by the way, he refers to the dates as being honey. Because it's so sweet. And I'll come back to that in a second. And he says that all this you can get for a zuz. In other words, you can find your sustenance so easy. Parnassa is so simple over here in Babylonia, not like in Eretz Yisrael where they had to work for it and so on, you know, work on. But here you have it. And yet the Bablai, these Babylonians, Blayaske Beraisa, they're not studying Torah. Instead of, you know, taking advantage of the fact that they don't have to work hard in order to find sustenance and spend the time studying Torah, they're not doing it. So that was his gripe. Right. Balaila, now that night, Tziaruhu, he began to get pains. I don't know. I can understand. He probably ate too many dates. And, you know,
he bought so fast as all the food.
That word, does that come from Tsaris? The word
Tsaris? Yeah, of course. Tsaris.
That's what it says.
Tsar means pain. Okay? So, Balayla Tsiaruhu, you know, they pained him. In other words, he must have eaten quite a quantity and, you know, began to get a bellyache. Exactly. So, Omar, he said, oi, he says, Mole son of the Sakina Bezuzi. Says, take a look, he can buy a bushel full of knives for one Zuz. You know, that's how sharp the pain was. Bablai Askib Araisa, and yet the Babylonians have time in order to study Torah. In other words, this time, instead of condemning them, he's praising them. That in spite of the fact that they have this kind of food so cheap, which causes so much constipation, or the opposite, you know, it gives you the runs and so on, the stomach aches and so on, you know, and yet, in spite of that, they have time to study Torah. All right, I said I wanted to say something about Dabash.
Dabash?
Yeah. We always translate the word Dabash as honey, okay?
I thought it seems
like Dabash.
I thought
you meant
the
wash. You mean the Dabash? No,
hang up Dabash.
If you remember, the Torah speaks about certain products in praise of Eretz Yisrael, right? And we learn from this that for these things you have to you know, make the bracha, and you say the bracha achron afterwards, okay? In other words, you know, ala michri, al kakolo, al aitz, al pi aitz, whatever, maybe al gevi, al pi agevin, you know. And, you know, it's derived from the words over there in the pasuk, eres kito, es aura, right? And then at the end of it says, eretz ze shemen udvash, which means, you know, a land which has olive trees, right? Which therefore means, you know, that whether it's for olive fruit and so on, right? With the vash and honey. Now, what kind of a fruit is honey?
Date.
So the answer is, it's the dates. Date. It's exactly what it is. Yeah.
But what is the word for date itself?
Tamar. Date? Tamar. Yeah, tamar. Mm-hmm. So, that's what they mean over there in the pasuk when it says that it's a land of honey. In other words, for dates too, you have to make this bracha, you know, al ha'eitz v'al pi ha'eitz, and so on. Right? Yeah.
It's like girls' names.
Yeah, right. But I mean, the girl was named that, you know, after the tree, of course. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Of course, in Eretz Israel today, they've gone, you know, a lot of names. Ilan, Ilana, and so on, you know. After all, what does Ilan mean?
Tree.
It means tree in Aramaic, you know. You know, the Torah, the word is Eitz. But in the Aramaic language, it's Ilan.
Nitsa.
Yeah, Nitsa, right. Blossom, and so on, yeah. And then all kinds of flowers.
Eretz.
Yeah, Kalania, and... what else? I mean, there are all kinds of
topping.
Yeah, yeah. Iris,
iris. Yeah, it's close, yeah,
right? But of course, even in Megillah we have Vayehi Yomein es Hadassah. Oh. What is Hadassah?
Hadassah
is the plant, exactly. Myrtle. Right.
Adasim.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, to get back. Tanya Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Koloilim Kuloim Mime Mayuk Yonis Hushoise. The entire world derives its water, that is, derives, you know, the water that eventually is going to.
Drink.
It drinks it from the ocean. From the waters of the ocean. That's where the entire world derives it. Shenemar, and he has a pasuk for this. The Eid Yaleh Min Ha'aretz, it's written in connection with the Garden of Eden, that a mist or a vapor rose from the earth, right? The Hishka is called Pnei Ha'adamah, and it watered the entire surface of the earth. So, in other words, where did this aid come from? The answer is it came from the ocean, according to him. Okay? And of course, we can understand. I mean, we know that... let's take a look at the Rashi for a moment, so we'll see how Rashi understands it, okay? You see where it says Bereshis Beis on the side over there?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so he says, Mimei Mei Ukyanis, right? Klomer, says Rashi. In other words, Mimayim Shelmata. In other words, the water. Remember, it's written about the second day that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam made a separation between the waters above the earth as compared to the waters underneath the earth. Okay? Okay. So he says, Klomer Mimayim Shelmata Velo Mimayim Shelmala. In other words, the rain that we have, where it's written, you know, that the mist rose, it came from the waters below and not from the waters up above in the sky. Shenemar Ve'ed Yalem in Ha'oretz Sheshosa Ba'oretz. In other words, first it had to drink the water that was on the earth, the Ola, and then it went up to the sky, and you know, and then it came back to the earth in the form of rain. Okay? So Amalora Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Eliezer, he says, Bahalo Meimeyuk Yonis Mabuchen Hein. Hey, how can you tell me that? Isn't the water of the ocean salty? So how come when it rains unsalted water? So that would contradict what you're saying. So Amalos, he said, No. He said to him, Mimatkin Be'ovin, others say Mitzmatkin Be'ovin. They both mean the same thing, except that one is active and the other one is like reflexive. But the basic meaning is they become sweet in the clouds. In other words, once the salt water rises to the clouds purify this water, and so it, when the rain comes, it is no longer salty.
Well, we know better.
No,
Melissa.
You didn't explain what happened to the salt.
The salt?
kiss. He didn't explain what happened.
No, he doesn't. Salt. He's not interested.
He says, you get salty clouds.
He wants to prove his theory. But still,
they're not professional scientists. They were
right. Okay. But you know, he figures out the clouds are like a purifying agent. You know, like a catalyst, so to speak. Okay, that causes a purifying action to take place up there. The salt, I guess, came from the highway, so it falls down on the earth.
That's where it happens.
Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua says, Kol Ha'olam Kulo B'Mayim Elyonim Hu Shoseh. No, he says, the whole world derives its water from the water up above the earth, right? Drinks it literally from it, right? Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Limtar Hashemayim Tishtemoyim. In other words, the earth will drink water from the rain coming from the sky. So the pasuk there indicates that it's the rain from the sky that, you know, produces the water on the ground, on the earth. Elaman ni mekayim. So in that case, how am I going to interpret the pasuk, the eid yalem in ha'oretz, right? So the answer is, melamed, this pasuk teaches us, Sheha'anonim bisgabrim v'yoylam lorkia. Teaches us that the clouds literally wax strong and rise up to the sky. Ufoschen pihen, and then they open their mouths, kenod, even like a pitcher. Or, no, this actually it's a skin, you know, they would use a skin in order to hold water. Right. So they open up their mouths, even like the opening of a skin pitcher. Umekablim lemotor, and they receive then the waters of the rain. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, the pasuk in the Yo, which says Yozoku matar leedo, that the rain becomes distilled, becomes purified, because of its vapor, because of its mist. And they are meaning that the clouds are they have holes in them even as a sieve has. In other words, through the holes in the clouds, so the waters then assemble in multitudes upon the face of the earth. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Chashvas Mayim, a multitude of water, Ovei Shechokim, from the clouds up in the sky. V'yein bein tipo l'tipo, and nevertheless, even though you have such a host of water coming down, between each individual drop, there is Elo kimeloi nimo. There's only a hair's breadth in between them. So the Lord Medcho, and this great miracle of rain is to teach you that what? Shegodol yom hageshomim, that the day of rain is as great, ki yom shenivru bo shamayim v'aretz, even as the day in which heaven and earth were created. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, oyse gedoles adin cheker, that Rabbeinu Shel Olam performs miracles without searching out. In other words, it can't even begin to describe the great miracles of Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Uchsiv, and another pasuk says, Hanoisein motor al pnei oretz, that God causes rain to fall upon the face of the earth. Uchsiv al halon, and then right after that we find another pasuk. Actually, it's a pasuk in Yeshayahu now instead of being a Iyov, but let's say lahalon means in a further reference, where it says, "Halo yodato, do you not know? Im lo shemata, haven't you heard? Elohei olam Hashem, God is the eternal God or the God of the universe. In cheker l'svunoso, and you cannot begin to even comprehend His understanding." Some add also the next pasuk, which is we also have another pasuk, Mechan Horim Bechoychoy, that Rabbeinu Shalom also
prepares, that is, he establishes the mountains in his great strength. All right. Keman azlo hodichsir. Now, how should we understand, literally, how are we to go? Azal in Aramaic means go. So how should we go? Or let's say, you know, that's not a good translation. So how should we understand hodichsir, the pasuk when says, mashke hor miyali. So remember this in the book in Nafshi, Psalm 104, we have it, that God causes the mountains to become watered from his upper chambers. In other words, someplace up in the sky. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Mali Yosef Shar Kodesh Baruch Hu, means, you know, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has, you know, upper stories from which rain comes. So come on, and whose opinion does he follow in this case? It's Rabbi Yeshua or Rabbi Eliezer. It's like Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Kevin the Salke Lahosom, when they say that as soon as it comes down there, that is, you know, to the mountains, then Mashka Mi'al Yosef, then in that case, you know, the waters from the upper chambers. So Kori Lahu, this is how you interpret the pasuk. The Ilo Semahoki, because if you don't interpret it this way, then Avak V'Ofer Min HaShemayim Hechim Shkosli. How are you going to interpret the fact that the Torah also says in the Tokicho that there's going to be dust and smoke and dirt, you know, coming from the sky? I mean, we know that not only, you know, there's rainfall, but very often, you know, that you could have also, like, for example, the Chamsin, where it brings all kinds of sand and dust and everything else, and so on, come from the sky. Mm-hmm. So, hello, yes. But we have to say, Kevin Dimendali Lahasam in Ashamayim Korile. Inasmuch as it gets down already, you know, to the area, let's say, to the clouds, you know, below the upper chamber, so in that particular case, it's like saying that it comes from the heaven. Or maybe it means if it falls on the Horim, on the mountains, so it's the same as saying that it's coming down from the mountains. At any rate, they're trying to interpret the Pesukim, you know, and you can't always give a literal translation for a puzzle. So Hochinami, likewise, then Kevin the Salki Lahosam Mi'ali Yosef Korale. So it's like saying it's coming from the upper chambers. Keman Azlo Hod Amarabichan. You know, how do we understand the following statement that Rabbi Chanina said, where he interprets the pasuk Koneis Kaneid Mehayom, no same boats arose to Hamos, right? That Rabbeinu Shel Olam gathers together the waters of the ocean or the waters of the sea, even like a neid. A neid would be, you know, like like a heap of water, like a pile, and he causes the depths, you know, the deep water to go into the Otsaros, and to the, literally, the storehouses. Mi goram lo Otsaros v'yishmalo. Bar, who causes the Otsaros? This is how he interprets it, you know. He wants to give a drash, so he says, who caused the fact that the Otsaros, in this case, meaning the storehouses of Bar, you know, of the grain, v'yishmalo Bar, that they should be filled with grain? It's Tahomos. It's, you know, the depths, in other words, the waters coming down. This is what causes the Otsaros to be filled. And if you wish, you can say that the Tahomos is, that's the water down below. Right. This causes the grain to grow. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, as in the case of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, as you know, he said before how they interpreted, you know, Mashke Hor Mi'al Yosef. Okay. And they say, Hahu Bevriyosei Shel Olam. So talking over there about it's like the creation of the world. Again, let's take a look at the Rashi. Bevriyosei Shel Olam, the top of the page, says, Kisiv Shehoya Kol Olam Shotuf B'mayim. Says, when the whole world was created, it was
you know, just overflowing with water. HaKadosh Baruch Hu kon some mokim echod, and then the Rabbeinu Shalom gathered water into one place. Kimachnis mayim benod, even as you put water into a pitcher, right, or into a skin, right. Shen the sonom beotzaros. In other words, he put them into their storehouses. Echsev no same beotzaros the homos. So some chol gevulo, some chol gevulo, and then what do they do? He the pasuk continues over there, and it says that, you know, he then put sand, as he created the sand, that it should serve as a boundary for the water, right? The otzer layam, and it should, you know, hold back the ocean, that it should not come and sweep over the earth. So, likewise, mashkehor mi'al yosav, this refers then to the creation and how God separated the waters, and the this is what brings fertility to the world. Tana Rabbana, our rabbis taught, Eretz Yisrael nivreis tekilo, v'cholom kulei nivra levsay. Says, you know what? The first place in the world to be created was what? Eretz Yisrael. This was created first. And then the rest of the world was created afterwards. Shenemar, Ad lo yoso Eretz bechutzos. Before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam made the land and chutzos, and the broad places, literally. But what is Eretz? Eretz over here, as he interprets, means Eretz Israel. And chutzos, that's the outside, and what we call chutz la'aretz today. All the lands that are outside Eretz Israel, this is chutz la'aretz. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam first created Eretz Israel, and then he created all other parts of the world. Okay, so listen, we know Eretz Israel has a very special place in our hearts.
You bet. What's that?
At one time there was quite a
large
area, wasn't
there? Eretz Israel, I mean, it's had different stages, okay? The Torah, for example, you know, gives different definitions as to what Eretz Israel should be. One definition, the narrowest, is from the Jordan up to the Mediterranean. Okay? In other words, from east to west, it would be from the Jordan to the... But this is the narrowest definition that they have. Why do I say it's the narrowest? Because originally, when the tribes of Eretz Israel, when the tribes of the Bnei Israel, excuse me, you know, were coming over, you know, in the leadership first of Moshe Rabbeinu and then Yehoshua after the death of Moshe, remember, they came up, you know, first through the area of Aqaba, Eilat, and so on, and they made their way north through lands like Moab, Edom, which they tried to go, and then they finally wound up in the land of Sichon and Og, okay, which was opposite Jericho, okay, it's opposite Jericho. And then what happened? They crossed the river, okay? They came to the land. Now the land from the Jordan to the Mediterranean, this was the land that originally was meant for all 12 tribes. Okay? But what happened in the days while Moshe Rabbeinu was still alive?
Two and a half tribes, right.
Okay? Decided... you know, Bnei Reuven, Bnei Gad, and you know, part of the Shevet Menashe. Okay, they decided that they liked the land on the other side of the Jordan. Okay, so they wanted that, you know, and so they made a promise to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right. Yeah, that's very good grazing grounds for the cattle. So they made a commitment, you know, that they would fight with their brethren to conquer all Eretz Israel. But, you know, that they wanted that their portion should be over there and not in Eretz Israel, that, you know, with the other 10 and a half tribes. Okay, so as time went on then, Ivrei Yarden was also recognized as being part of Eretz Israel, so that in biblical times,
Gilad and you know, Menashe and so on, and Bashan and so on, okay, these were all, even Golan, okay, these were all part of Eretz Israel. Then of course we find other definitions of what Eretz Israel is, that for example it goes as far as the Nahar Paras to the Euphrates River, right, and then the opposite goes to Nachal Mitzrayim, to literally the
water,
the river or the brook of Egypt, okay, to the river of Egypt.
Should that be the Nile?
Well, that's a question as to what they mean by Nachal Mitzrayim. There have been different interpretations. The broadest interpretation means up to the Nile, but you know, others denied the Nile as being that. So what do they say? So they say that Nachal Mitzrayim is a stream that they call Wadi El Arish. And, you know, that was recognized as being the end of Eretz Israel and the beginning of the Sinai Desert over there. And that was already sort of understood as being Sinai. Maybe it belonged to Egypt, maybe it didn't belong at all. Okay? And of course, in modern times, you had this big controversy. You know, if Eretz Israel had stayed on the Nile River the way it was, but they didn't, you know. Thanks to Kissinger, we gave it up after the war in 73. Yes.
In, I think it's what you're describing is about Midbar. I hope I'm right. Okay.
Yes.
I've always been curious because I could never figure out the geography. When Hashem describes to Moshe what will be the dimensions of Israel,
yeah,
the dimensions to the north, I've never been able to figure out, where does it stop?
Okay, there are differences of opinion. But it would seem that the north doesn't stop at where the present border is, but it goes even as far as up to about Tsor.
Sure.
Tyre.
Lebanon.
Right.
Tyre,
right.
What you want? Right. Turkey?
But in other
Lebanon.
Words, no, it's Lebanon.
Lebanon.
Today it's called Lebanon. In those days it wasn't called that, okay?
Phoenicia.
Yeah, all right. I mean, you had, you know, the Phoenicians who were living over there, but even Phoenicia, this is a name given by the Greeks. It's not their own name. They called themselves Canaanites. Yeah. But, you know, you had these big two city-states over there, Tsor and Sidon, Tyre and Sidon, okay? So, until close, it's called the Bor Hamas in the Torah, okay? That area, which was actually north of Rosh HaNikra, but let's say maybe halfway up to, you know, where Tyre and Sidon are today, so that was still part of the territory of Eretz Israel.
Okay, and
yeah,
it obviously defines the Kinneret as a boundary, but it goes north of the Kinneret.
Correct.
How far does it go in that direction?
It goes up practically, you know, through the Golan and so on, up to Mount Hermon.
Oh,
this
okay,
would be the northern border.
That's right, it was
up
Hermon,
to Mount
right,
Hermon.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it isn't too much different from the northern borders.
No, no, there's a great deal of similarity, except that we're not exactly sure where is the Bol Hamas is exactly.
How close to Damascus?
That's, Damascus is more to the east already. It's north. It's northeast. Damascus is northeast. It's, you know, if you would continue from the Golan, it's about another 30 miles or so to Damascus.
That's in Syria.
Yeah. Yeah. In those days it was called Aram. I mean, Syria was also. It's a Greek name. It didn't exist before.
And in the south.
Yeah.
Now you talk about the Nahar Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
But the south. Was the border more along the present line of where Arad is?
Well, that's a question. That already is a question. The truth is that, generally speaking, Beersheba is considered the most southerly city. And let's say that the border continued a little bit beyond that. But beyond that, what did you have? You had Midbar Tzion. You had the Arava and so on. So that was technically not considered being a vital part of Eretz Israel.
Right.
But actually, they never did conquer all of the so-called specified land.
Well, in the days of King David, they did conquer. at that point, actually,
pretty big country, yes, at that time.
Because he conquered Ammon, Moab, and so on. So he really extended the borders of Eretz Yisrael. But subsequently, Ammon and Moab got back their land. See, after the death of King David, after the death of King Solomon.
They actually conquered the Philistines?
They conquered the Philistines, yeah, too, yeah. Oh. But still, there were probably remnants that remained in the basic Philistine cities, like Gaza, you know, Gaza, and Ekron, and, yeah. Because we have references yet, though. I mean, even the days, let's say, of Amos, first chapter over there, where he condemns various people, so he mentions, you know, these people, you know, as being, you know, that worthy of condemnation for their cruelty.
Their cruelty.
Right, and then he finally laces it into the Jewish people themselves, you know. First, you know, for Yisrael, and then, you know, Yehuda, you know, for their shortcomings as well. But, you could say that there were certain enclaves that still existed in those days. But by and large, the land was Jewish territory. And certainly once you had the days of the Second Temple, when they came back and they began to repopulate, I'm not talking the beginning was only a handful of people who came back. But eventually they populated the whole area, and then, you know, there's no question that... you know, not only what is between the Jordan and Eretz and the Mediterranean, but also, you know, all of the Transjordan too was Jewish territory.
Really, in the days of the
In the days of the Second Temple, certainly. Yeah. Later on, there's no question about that.
How many years was there between the First and Second Temple?
You mean the interim period? We figure 70 years.
Just 70
years?
Yeah,
there were several references between the time that... the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 586, and the rebuilding under Cyrus took place roughly about 530. But, what did I say, 586, yeah. But in reality, you have to count the Exodus, the Golas already from the first Golas, which took place in the year 597.
And how long did the Second Temple last? How long did the Second Temple last?
The Second Temple lasted over 400 years. Yeah. First temple also lasted over 400 years.
Who's the Noah that was the first the fruit's from
you
which
saying?
From mm-hmm. which from which king, from which Noah was it that the Nebuchadnezzar took many of the nobles in him? What was the
That was Yo-Yachin. Yeah. Also called Konya sometimes, yeah. But Yehoyachin is the official name that was given to him. He only reigned about 3 months because he followed Yehoyakim, who reigned quite a long time, but it was not a very good king. He hated Yirmiyahu, he burnt his prophecies and everything else. And then he died just before the Babylonians completed the siege of the city, and so Yehoyakim was taken into captivity. But the city was not destroyed at that time.
Right.
What happened was that the king appointed another member of the house of David, Tzidkiyahu. He said, okay, I appoint you now the official king of Israel. Mm. But, you know, you got to swear loyalty to me. So he was a vassal. And he was king for about 11 years. But the Jews decided that they didn't want to serve Nebuchadnezzar anymore. And they got together with other neighboring countries that said, we'll make war together and we'll regain our freedom, like Egypt and Ammon, Moab, you know, these various nations. So it's, you know, but the truth of the matter is that they left the Jews in the lurch.
They were holding the bag.
Yeah, and the Jews were left in the lurch. The others chickened out. And the Jews were the ones who fought against the Babylonians. And for 3 years they fought. But eventually... they lost.
What happened to all the inheritance that were living in the lands as it was conquered? Did they kill everybody?
Are you talking about when the Babylonians destroyed the land?
No, I'm talking when the Jews reclaimed, went to Eretz Israel.
When Jews went to Eretz Israel?
different things happen. No, the only time that we read about that is supposed to come was the time of Yahushua, that's all.
They fought wars.
But after that, you don't have that business anymore.
Okay,
except in the days of Shaul, you know, with Amalek, I mean, that question. But that's the only one that you have. Otherwise, you don't have it.
When you say that there was a repopulation at the time of
later Second Temple days, right.
But not at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah.
No,
this would be later.
Was only about 40,000 came back.
So this was when...
you had the Samaritans who were bugging them, you had others. Right.
So the greater, this repopulation took place
as time went on, in the days of the Second Temple, right. Yes. I guess it was particularly true, you know, once the Maccabees were in control and the Jews were once more independent, so that, you know, the Jewish population spread throughout all kinds of areas in Eretz Israel. All right, let me get a bit of the Vayter, and then we'll call a halt tonight.
The last session for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Let's say the next time that we'll meet will be on the 13th of April. And we'll daven at 7:15, and we'll learn at about 7:45. Yeah. Was that a bit? Yes. All right. Right. Yeah. So the third line over there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, "Eretz Yisrael, Mashgiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Biatzmo." The Rebbeinu Shel Olam actually is the one who personally takes care of seeing that Eretz Israel has sufficient water. The Chol Ha'olam Kulo, and the rest of the world, it's Al Yedei Shaliach. They're taken care of by one of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's emissaries, by an angel, so to speak. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Hanoisim Mota Pnei Eretz, right? That God causes rain to fall upon the face of Eretz, in this case again, interpreted as Eretz Israel. The Shaleach Mayim, and he sends water. Now, of course, he sends means that he sends it through whom? Through a Shaleach, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Shaleach Mayim, al Pnei Chutzos. Yes, on the outside countries. Eretz Yisrael, Sheisa Megashomim. Eretz Yisrael drinks actual rainwater. The Choloim Choloim Tamsis. And the rest of the world gets it from water, literally, which is squeezed out. In other words, from the rest of the, you know, the water that, like, is left over, so to speak. Okay? Shenemar, as the post again says, Hanoisin Motor Alpine Arts. Okay? Eretz Yisrael Shoiso Tekilo. Eretz Yisrael drinks first. The Choloilam Kuloi Livisoif. And then the rest of the world drinks the waters afterwards. Shenemar. Anoisei motor al pnei arts. Moshe liyodom, it can be compared to a person, shemegabel es hakavina, who is he's making cheese, okay? Literally, he's kneading the cheese. What does he do? Noitel es ha'oichel, umoniach es hapselos. He takes that which is edible first, and he leaves, you know, the inferior part. You know, it's what we call, you know, the cheese, the whey, and so on, right? That there's a byproduct, so to speak. Omar, getting back to another statement, says, "Mematken heim be'ovin minali." How do we know that the waters become sweetened in the clouds? How does he know that? So he says, "Omar Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef." As Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef said, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and then Rabbi Yochanan Ksiv, it's written, Cheshchas Mayim of Ishchokim. Literally, it means, this is in Tehillim, it says that, the darkness of the water is caused by the clouds in the sky. Ksiv, and then another pasuk, this is Shmuel Beis. You know, it's a similar, the psalm and the next to the last the chapter in Shmuel Beis are similar in content. So it's written there, Chashras Mayim of Ishpakim, which means a multitude of water is on the clouds of the sky. So he says, Shkol Kav, you know what? Take out the Chav, so we have what? Chesh Shin Tov, right? Vishadei Aresh, and put it, he says, next to the Reish, and guess what we get? In order to get a combination of two psukim, the Kori Bey, you read it, Hachsharas, which means that the preparation of the water is up in the sky. And of course, you know, you make it kosher by sweetening the water so that it's fit for human consumption. Okay, I think I'm going to stop over here right now. My voice is getting a little tired.
So we're on Omid Aleph.
I'll tell you what, let's go to the next two dots. All right, so we have just a little bit more. Right, all right. So, Rabbi Yeshua, Behanei Kroi, my Dorish Behu, and what does Rabbi Yeshua do with these two psukim? You know, the fact that one in the Pasuk says, Cheshkas, and the other one, Cheshras. So, Savalah, he interprets it, or he understands it, Skiha, Dechiyosa Rabdimi. He understands it like, as Rabdimi said, when Rabdimi came from Eretz Israel to Babylonia, Omar, and he said, Amrei b'ma'arova, they say in Eretz Israel, Nahor Anone Zeirin Wohi, that when the clouds are bright, then the water is very light. Choshuch Anone Segeimoi. But if the clouds are dark, then it means there'll be plenty of water. Kamana Azlo Hodetanya, how do we understand, you know, the interpretation that Mayim Ha'yoinim Imam Arhim Tluim, that the waters up above hang through literally the word of God, in other words, through a miracle. Ufeiro Sehen, and the fruits of the water on top are Megishon and Mother Rain. Shenemar, Miprima Sechot His Bahorets. Pasuk says also in Bokhi Nafshi, it says that the earth becomes sated from the fruit of your hands. So naturally, what is the fruit of the hands? The answer is, in this case, rain, according to his interpretation.
Yeah.
Of course, you could also understand that the earth becomes sated with the fruit of God's hands, meaning the trees, the vegetation, the plants, and everything else, you know, or all the creatures that he made. But, you know, again, as I say, with a drash, you don't ask too many questions. Okay, a drash is a drash.
Come on.
Okay. Come on. Whose opinion is this? It's Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, who say that who say come on. He says Rabbi Yeshua. He says this is like Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. Rabbi Eliezer, how does he interpret? He says who b'masi of Shalach Kodesh Baruch Hu b'tzeh. We're talking about in general the what the Rabbeinu Shalom literally does with his own hands. In other words, what the Rabbeinu Shlomo does himself, as we've already interpreted the pasuk. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, "Kol ha'olam kuli mitamtzis gan eden b'shesed." The entire world drinks from the distillation that comes out of Gan Eden. In other words, Gan Eden is the primeval or the primary source of water in this universe. Because, you know, if you remember over there in the creation, Gan Eden speaks about the four waters that went out of Eden in order to water the entire earth, right? So therefore he says it's from the water that is distilled from Gan Eden that the whole world derives its water. Shenema, the Nohar Yotze Me'Eden, right? That a river went out from Eden, right? And so on. Tono, Mitamtzis Beis Kur, Shesa Tarkov. And likewise, we learned that from whatever water that you knew that you need in order to cultivate a base core, which is a considerable amount of land, so Shesa Tarkov, so even a tiny plot can also get the overflow from it. Okay, we'll stop at this point. As you notice, we almost have finished this first Mishnah with its interpretation. And we'll be ready, right? So we'll stop at the Rabban Eretz Mitzrayim, right? And then we'll be learning new Mishnayos over here, the interpretation. And in a few weeks, we'll still have quite a few pages before the end of the first paragraph.
Chapter 1.
Yeah, so the first paragraph is a fairly long one. The others are not as long as
Chapter 1.
But goes
chapter,
up to test
chapter world. 1 goes to what?
To test world, and that's
test world,
practically
yeah.
half
yeah.
the new chapter.
Yeah.
All right, anyway, we are progressing.
We're making progress.
Oh, yeah.
Almost to Shlishi.
Yeah, that's right. We've covered practically one third of the Gemara.
Practically.
Yeah. So we're on the.
We're on, right, we're on Daf Yud.
Daf Yud, right. Amud Aleph.
Right.
Do that between Hanukkah and Pesach. That's really.
Everybody knows where we are.
Yeah, Daf Yud, Amud Aleph.
Daf Yud, Amud Aleph, and we are approximately just before the halfway mark, which says Tana Rabbanan. See the base course shows Hatarkov, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we start with the new mark. Tana Rabbanan. Our sages have taught us Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Mitzrayim, Havya Dalad, Meis Parsa, Dalad, Meis Parsa. A little bit of geography. That they say that the land of Egypt is 400 parasangs by 400 parasangs. Of course, the question is, what's a parasang? Parasang was a measure used among the Romans, the Greeks, but particularly among the Persians. And a parasang was roughly about 2.5 miles in length. So it's much more than a mile. The word mile itself, where do we get the word mile? The answer is that in Latin, the expression for mile is mille passi, which means 1,000 foot. 1,000 feet, okay? 1,000 feet, this is what it meant, this is a mile. So obviously, I mean, a Roman mile was a little bit more. I mean, it was really supposed to be based upon the stride of the person who was walking. So that's how they measured it. Well, the parasang was at least about 2.5 times that. So Egypt itself, then, good evening, we just began. So Egypt is 400 parasangs by 400 parasangs. And what about that? And then it says, and it's 1/60th of the size of Kush. Kush, of course, is Ethiopia. So that, in other words, Kush is much larger than Egypt. The Kush, and what about Kush? He says, Echad Mishishim Bo'elam. It's 1/60th of the world is Ethiopia. Maybe by Ethiopia, they don't mean what we call Ethiopia, but they mean, let's say, all the Schwarzios over there. You know, places like Rwanda and
others, yes.
Over the place, you know.
Kenya.
Right, yeah. All those places over there. Yeah. Okay. The Olam, how about the world itself? So it says that the world is Echad Mishishim, Egan. It's 1/60th the size of Gan Eden. The Gan, how about Gan Eden itself? He says it's Echad Mishishim Le Eden. You notice over here, he's making a distinction between the Gan and between the Eden. The Gan is the garden, and Eden is, in general, I suppose, it's paradise. So that the Gan itself is only 1/60th the part of Eden. And how about Eden? The Eden, Echon B'Shishim B'Gehinim. And Eden is only 1/60th the size of Gehinim. So, in other words, Gehinnom is much larger in size. I guess it means that, you know, we should all be merit, you know, to go to Gan Eden. Even as it says, Kol Yisrael Yishlem Chelukum Habo, right? But apparently it's a more exclusive area than than Gehinnom, which is larger in its capacity.
Why the geography lesson now?
Why the geography lesson? Okay, I think that it's based upon the idea about what we had just before, where it says about the right, that the Tana Matamsis, you know, based on Shesha Tarkov, because remember before it said that the whole world gets its water from what? Only from like the leftover water or the water that's already been distilled. You know, squeezed out of Gan Eden. First, Gan Eden is the primary source, and then it gets. So, if that's the